My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to hell. I mean, welcome to Life's a Banquet, a show about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, pourable, and also blow your noseable with your hosts, me, George Clooney from ER, and
me, Anthony Edwards from ER, with a sinus infection.
Nicole was sick last week, and she remains sick, but adorable.
Adorable. People love to hear stopped up nose sounds.
Yeah, they do love it. It sounds sexy. Now, let me ask you, Nicole, before the show, you mentioned you're joining us live from your bed. Is this true?
Yeah, I'm broadcasting live from my bed.
Oh my God, that's so sexy. Are you doing anything sexy while you're talking to us, or just laying straight like a mummy?
I'm covered in tissue paper from head to toe, which is very sexy, probably to someone out there.
Poor buddy. You have a sinus infection. It started as a little bit of a ear infection. Is that true? An orecete infection?
Well, it's like I got my booster shot and I had a little bit of a sore throat, and then I got really sick, but I thought it was from my booster. But then I just stayed sick for 8 days after that. So it's a sinus infection, I believe, which also clogged up my ear. So I can only hear out of one of my ears, which is thrilling.
Which one?
The right ear.
I'm sorry, to your left ear. In fact, I'm just going to start saying terrible shit, but only to your left ear. Okay. You'll never know.
I'll never know. Sorry. Oh my God.
Mary and I were having a chat yesterday and talking about pasta shapes we like. And we were talking about orecchiette. And I was like, you know, I wish I still had Brucey so I could ask all the servers to go ahead and push the special, a bowl of little warm boiled ears. For anyone who doesn't know, orecchiette means little ear. And I just think it's so funny to be like, and tonight we have a bowl of boiled tiny ears with brown butter and sage.
There's also somebody invented a new pasta recently. Did you hear about this?
Get the hell out of here. Yeah. I did know about it.
Oh, you did? Okay. I'm like, but I don't remember what it's like.
I remember it looking a little bit like a campagnole, kind of like a curly shape, like a curly short extruded shape. And I say brava to you, whoever invented this. I want to say it was like the Spolina pasta people invented it.
Okay.
However, I can't imagine. It's almost like inventing, like saying a sentence that you think no one said before. It's like,
yeah.
Pasta's been around for thousands of years. I can't imagine that shape's never existed, but go ahead. Go with it.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you.
So what else is new? Have you been watching anything while you've been laying in your bed?
I watched I've been watching The OC. For some reason, it's all I can tolerate in my state of disease. What a great show, though. Lots of early 2000s fashion errors.
low cut pants. Yeah. Major errors. Low cut pants where you can see your underwear that's matching your top coming out.
It's
where you cut the waistband off.
Hair, like there's the main character mom has like this crazy, like layered haircut, but it's always straightened. So it's never like, it's just bizarre. She has like extremely short layers in it. And I don't know why.
Yeah. It was a very honestly, and you know, this is obviously no new information, but the early 2000s is the most criminally
bad time
in fashion, and I'm not sure how it happened. I mean, I guess we could distill it down, but we don't really have enough time today. But it deserves to be punished. It was very bad. There's nothing really redeemable about it, as far as I'm concerned. Dresses on top of jeans was big, which is a no from me, dog.
Yeah, there's a scene where Kirsten, the mom, once again, is wearing, like, it's a fancy dinner. She's wearing, like, a like a backless halter top over a tank top and also flared black pants.
Wow. That's too much to handle. And a choppy layered haircut.
Yeah.
I've been, like, relentlessly binge watching for, you know, I've watched it before in the past a couple of times, but really getting into the Larry Sanders Show in such a serious way that it's all I want to not only watch, but it's actually also all I want to talk about, like, with anyone. And anyone who's like, how are you? I'm like, I'm great. I'm watching the Larry Sanders Show. Hey now. Like, I'm just like so into it. And I'm not sure if, you know, it's repellent or attractive, and I don't particularly care, but it's like actually all I can handle right now. Yeah. It's just Gary Shandling's like kind of sagging face, rest in peace, and Rip Torn's voice, and all of the 90s stars that we love to hate and hate to love just up in our faces.
Yeah, it's a good show. I need to rewatch that too.
It's so much fun to watch. Like, it's so quick and, like, truly just, like, right, the precursor to, like, all of the kind of funny shows from the 2000s, like Arrested Development and The Office and stuff like that. It's good.
Totally.
It's much better, in fact, some would say. Like me, I'm some.
I have some Ben and Jennifer news for you.
Ah, thank the Lord.
The news is a whole article was written about that people should go watch the movie Jersey Girl. Because...
oh my God, I forgot about that movie.
Because they're in it together.
Okay. I tried watching Jiggly and I was not a fan, to say the least, but I will try Jersey Girl because I have nothing left to lose basically at this point in my life.
I've never seen Jersey Girl. I cannot possibly imagine Jennifer or Liv Tyler and Ben Affleck having good chemistry together, but
where does Jennifer Lopez come in though?
She plays like his wife that I believe dies. probably during childbirth, I'm assuming. That's how women die in the movies.
Of course. Or in like a car accident.
Because he has to like raise a daughter alone, I think, is the premise of this film.
God help that poor child. But then finds love with Liv Tyler, who he reconnects with just as the world's ending. It's amazing that he went from whatever Jersey job he had to becoming a first-class astronaut in such a little span of time.
Well, he's like an oil rig guy.
Oh, he was an oil rig guy in Armageddon?
Yeah, they're oil rig guys and they train them to be astronauts.
Like, in a short time? They're like, yeah. Get over here!
They're like, well, since the world will be completely destroyed by this comet, we'll teach you, we'll learn you guys how to drill oil on a comet.
Is that what happens? They drill all the oil out of the comet. Does he die? Sorry, if anyone's never seen the movie, please clog up your orecetes right now. Does he die in the movie?
No, Bruce. So, okay. You've never seen Armageddon?
I did, but I don't remember anything about it. I saw it when it came out in the movie theater in the year, like, 1800.
I've seen it, like, 600 times, I think. But, so, yeah, they basically train these roughneck oil rig guys to be astronauts so they can fly... land their jet or whatever they are that go into space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the jet.
Their space
jet. Helicopter.
They land it on the meteorite or whatever the fuck, the comet. I don't remember.
Totally. What's
the and then the plan is for them to drill into the center of the comet or meteorite or whatever and put a nuclear weapon in there.
Mm.
And then fly away, and then they'll ignite it before it hits Earth.
Yeah, that's a good plan. That's what I would say to do.
As in all space movies, things go horribly wrong. And Bruce Willis has to sacrifice himself to stay on the comet / meteorite to save the lives of the crew.
He's like, I've been dead the whole time anyway.
He's like, you were dead the whole time. Yeah. So... that is what happened. And then Hans Gruber shows up and is like, dude, die hard, you know what I mean?
Oh, I thought you meant like actual, the guy who played Hans Gruber was also in Armageddon. I was like, that's information I can't handle.
No, I was trying to do what you did when we mixed the movie.
I understand. I get it.
Get on my program.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. Actually, in interesting Bruce Willis news, the other day, I saw Johnny Depp on the street, and he had blonde hair.
Ew.
He looked very weird. And then days later, I was at Keen's for Becky's birthday, and coming hot off of my Johnny Depp sighting experience, I saw a bald man walking towards me in Keens, and I was like, oh my God, it's Bruce Willis. But it wasn't, it was just another man who had no hair.
Darn it.
Yeah, it wasn't him, but it did look a lot like him, and he was also undead. He was a ghost.
That is really good.
Disappeared into thin air. Yeah. I looked behind me, he was gone. So I was like, it must have actually been Bruce Willis.
What was Johnny Depp doing?
He was taking pictures of the street. He was in front of Supreme. Ryan and I were like walking down the street. We were like on the Bowery looking for equipment or whatever for the pop-up. And we're like turning the corner, went to go get a slice of pizza. And he was like on the corner in front of Supreme. This is not an interesting story. And Ryan is like, hey, that's Johnny Depp. And I was like, huh, what's he doing? And Ryan's like, he's taking pictures of the cars that are passing by.
What a freak.
Yeah, he's a real squirrely guy. Bless you. Bless your heart. Is anyone taking care of you? Has anyone brought you some Gatorade?
No, I'm all alone in this world.
Me too. Welcome. We are so far apart from each other, we can't even bring each other tissues.
I have been having nice delivery people bring me chicken soup, which leads me to our topic.
Get right into this topic. We got a hard out. We got to be off air. And
yeah, Armin threatened our lives with tool emojis.
Yeah, that's true. If we
don't finish right at one, which is violence. Yeah. I don't choose violence, Armin.
Okay? Armin, you're in big trouble from us. You hear that? We're going to go and we're going to do a 2-hour show today and just see what you do. Are you going to cut us off like at the a person of color at the Oscars.
Yeah, with the symphony sound. That would be funny.
Yes, please. Let's own this show with the symphony. Okay, get into it.
Okay, so I wanted to do sick foods because I was sick last week. And so I decided to do Jewish penicillin, which is chicken soup. Mm. And I'm not Jewish, but
I am.
That's okay. I play one on TV.
I'll support the Jewishness for the entire podcast. Yeah, you can borrow some of mine.
You are Jewish. Good job. So I got all of my information from a website called theconversation.com. And so here we go.
Great.
So people started using chicken or poultry, I guess is what they said, in their soups right as soon as they figured out how to boil water. It was instantaneous. They were like, oh my God, this water is boiling. Let's put a chicken in here. And voila. That is a history of chicken soup. I'm done. Just kidding. So the tradition of chicken soup is also a very strongly in Chinese culture as well. So that's where we're going to start. In the 2nd century BC, a Chinese medical text referred to chicken soup as yang food, or a warming dish that would cure disease. In Chinese culture, chicken soup is given to a woman after pregnancy and to the elderly because it's believed to be invigorating, has an invigorating effect. So I guess if you're old in China, people are just constantly handing you chicken soup at all times.
Drink this, don't die.
You look old. Here is some chicken soup. which is probably why Johnny Depp looked old. Did he look old?
He did look old, and he was without soup, and I now regret that I didn't go into Supreme and get some of their world-famous chicken soup and give it to him.
Oh, my God. Of course he was in front of Supreme. LOL. In China, noodles represent long life. So when they started adding noodles to chicken soup, it was to bring well-being to your family. That's why we have chicken noodle soup today.
I love that. That's amazing.
This noodle shops became popular during this dynasty. And so that then spread chicken noodle soup. And then it became popular throughout Asia, which before it had just sort of been in China. And then Jewish folklore, chicken soup is tied to the Central European medical history. So the Greek physician Galen recommends, to this day, he's still alive, I guess. he recommends chicken soup for migraines, leprosy, constipation, and fever.
Wow, that's a lot of things. I never tried that for my migraines. I went right to the neurologist and got on those Pharmies.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's not going to help your leprosy, but what do I know?
I mean, yeah, I'm already pretty much only a head and neck.
At the end of the Middle Ages, Jewish philosopher / physician Moses Maimonides, probably didn't say that right, Moses, I'm sorry.
Moses Murray Maimonides.
He recommended chicken soup for the weak and the sick, but nobody ate it because it wasn't really that popular to chicken. Just wasn't around in the 15th century or before the 15th century. So he was like, have some chicken soup, weak people. And they were like, no. But then in the 15th century, raising chickens became really popular. So then they were like, okay, now we'll have it. Now the wheat people will have chicken soup.
Right. Get this thing in a pot ASAP. I think it's Maimonides. Maimonides. Yes. Because there's still like a chain of hospitals in New York, actually, I think that's named after this person. And it's Maimonides.
Great. Good job.
Thank you. I'm Jewish. I told you. I know how to pronounce all of these names.
Exactly. That's right. Moving on. Similar to the Chinese tradition, Sephardic Jews gave olds they gave chicken soup to old people and women who had given birth. And the kind of chicken soup that they would give them was called old hen chicken broth.
Oh my God, how dare they?
Which I thought, it's funny.
I love it.
Sephardic Jews also started the tradition of putting rice in their chicken soup, which I like.
I like that too. Chicken rice soup is really nice.
After the 15th century, which was a big moment in chicken soup history, apparently, chicken soup became part of the Ashkenazi culture as well, basically because the Sephardic Jews gave it to them. They're like, here's some chicken soup, bro. and they're like, thank you. I did just have a baby. After World War II, it basically got super popular in America because of all of the Jewish immigrants coming on in here. and that is when Jewish penicillin became a thing, like a nickname or whatever. Can chicken soup actually cure you? Possibly. In 1978, Marvin Sackner, a doctor of some kind, did a study that showed that drinking chicken soup was actually better at clearing congestion than hot water or cold water.
Ah, I wonder why.
In 1980, a study showed that it can thin the mucus in your lungs, which then possibly could help the white blood cells fight off the infection faster.
That's interesting. I wonder what it's about. I mean, I wonder if it's just the hot liquid. I wonder if it's like, you know, onion in there and carrot and that kind of influence, or is it something in the chicken? Like, I mean, obviously we know like, right, bone broth from beef bones is helpful because there's collagen in it and that has a direct effect. But I wonder what it is about the chicken that's actually healing.
I don't know. And is it just chicken? We don't know. But there is a great deal of calcium in it if you make it from the bones of the chicken. But the same could be said for any bone broth. But they don't know. Huh. But it possibly is a cure-all, which is why I've been exclusively eating chicken soup for 7 freaking days.
It doesn't seem like it's really working, though. Can we agree on that?
Exactly.
So this isn't, you've busted this myth wide open.
I did. I busted it open. This fucking Marvin Sackner's a lying piece of shit.
Go die, Marvin Sackner. Just kidding. I'm sure you already have. I think I mentioned this to you the other day when we were talking about chicken soup, is that, you know, I grew up, my mom is Jewish. My grandmother was Jewish. We were never like religious or anything, but definitely the food traditions were strong. And so anytime I was sick growing up, my mom would make chicken noodle soup. And I love it, and I love my mom is a fabulous cook, and I love her food. But there is something that I still kind of don't like about chicken soup because it reminds me of being sick. So even smelling like chicken soup cooking, even when I make broth at home, I have to like really put on like, I mean, I don't love when my house smells like food anyway, but I have to like really get like the lemons boiling and the incense going because it's just something about that smell of chicken broth I like it, but it reminds me of feeling sick.
Yeah, I only eat chicken soup when I'm sick. I don't ever get it otherwise, which I think is interesting because it's good.
It's so good. And I made some recently. I made some like a couple months ago and I had like, it was so gorgeous and it was all like the nice, you know, I made my own broth and I roasted the chicken and it was gorgeous vegetables and I really couldn't eat it. I had to like give it away. I gave it away to people. I'm like, I'll eat some of this tomorrow. And then I kept not wanting it. And I really think that's the issue. I'll eat matzo ball soup, like chicken matzo ball soup.
Yeah, I do like that.
I prefer that. but there's something about just plain chicken noodle soup that like, I like it. Again, I like it. It just reminds me of being sick. So I don't really eat a lot of it. How interesting though. Yeah. Should we take a little break and come back with my sick story?
Yeah.
Okay, sick. Great. Sick. Grab your Kleenex, bruh.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. Are you sick and tired of coughing through the night? Are you sick and tired of waking up with a pillow soaked in snot? This was going to be an ad for something, but I kind of lost my enthusiasm for it.
I am sick and tired of that. Yes. Thank you for asking.
Guys, did anyone listen to an old episode of ours? What listeners out there will know that you're true fans if you listen to our infomercial episode, which I re-listened to recently. And Nicole, you really are you're funny. It made me laugh. It was really good.
I know. I feel like I'm off my game today. Sorry, everyone.
I mean, I think we can give you a small break or even a huge break. And you're still very funny. It's just we can tell you don't feel good because, of course, of your infected orecates.
Yeah, my orecates. Those fucking bastards.
Ew, your orecates are full of brown butter. And it's clogging.
Ew, that's probably true.
Ew. Okay, so in the spirit of our sickness episode, our sick foods, I decided I would do ginger because ginger is something that, I mean, it's like a go-to. When I was a kid, at least, it was like chicken soup and like ginger ale, right? And as an adult, like if I, you know, get sick, I immediately throw ginger, like make a fresh ginger tea or put ginger in my juicer. It's just definitely like the thing I think about having because it's like truly variant. It has a lot of antibacterial qualities. Science research has shown that ginger is really very good for you. It's an anti-inflammatory. It's good for gastric distress. It has all kinds of wonderful medicinal remedies. But that wasn't really interesting enough, I don't think, to talk about for a full 20 minutes. So I started going down the rabbit hole of stories kind of about ginger. And I decided to talk about gingers, the mutants that roam amongst us. Just kidding.
Oh my God. Are we allowed to call them that still?
My dad was a ginger. So I feel it's okay for me to say it. And also one of my closest friends, two of my closest friends are gingers, Mary O'Malley and Preston. So,
oh yeah, Preston. Aww.
Take a pass from the ginger community. So I got all my information today about the story I'm going to tell you from Wikipedia and an article called The Jake Leg in The New Yorker. So, as I mentioned, ginger has anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and other helpful properties. One thing that I was going to talk about, I was like, oh, the history of ginger ale. And so I started looking up the history of ginger ale. And there was nothing really that interesting except for this one story. I think it took place in Scotland or England, somewhere over the pond. And it was like in the turn of the century, a woman was drinking a ginger beer. And when she got to the bottom of it, there was like a dead snail There was a dead snail in the bottle.
Gross.
And she got,
how'd it get in there?
She got violently ill from drinking this dead snail ale. And she sued, and it was like the one of the first cases of like tort, like, you know, when we were talking about tort law, when we talked about the McDonald's hot coffee cup case.
Yeah.
It was like one of the first one of those cases ever. And it was about ginger ale. But essentially, I just told you all the highlights is all there is to know about this. But I just go ahead and check that out, because can you imagine a dead rotten snail in your ginger ale? Rude.
But people eat snails. How come she got sick from it?
Well, because it was like fermented. It was like, it wasn't a fresh snail. You have to like catch a snail, cook it in butter, and then eat it. You can't let it just decay in a bottle for like 2 years. Then it's very poisonous. So anyway, I decided that I would talk about something which I didn't really know anything about. But when I started looking up ginger, I heard this, I came across this terminology, the jakewalk. And I remember this whatever bar that was in Cobble Hill like years ago when Brucey first opened, called the jakewalk. So it sounded familiar. So I kept looking into it. And now knowing what it's about, I'm very confused as to why they decided it was like appropriate to name the bar this, but that's their problem, not mine. So are you ready for the story of Jamaican ginger and the jakewalk?
Yes.
Okay, great. Otherwise known as Jake Leg. So Jamaica ginger extract was known in the U.S. by the slang name Jake. And in the 19th century, like in the late 19th century, it was like a kind of like a tonic that was sold legally. And it had like a high concentration of ginger. So when people were feeling like they're getting sick, it was just like, oh, take some of this Jamaica ginger and you'll be fine. But during Prohibition, people were trying to like just buy it because you could legally obtain it. And it had like 70 to 80% ethanol by weight. So it could kind of get you drunk. However,
but it would be so gingery and burn your throat.
Of course. And as we'll come to find out, it caused a lot of other problems. So in the by the 1930s, a large number of users of Jamaica ginger were affected with the paralysis of the hands and feet that quickly became known as Jamaica ginger paralysis, or Jake paralysis, or the Jake walk. So in small doses, when you mix it with water, it was great. It cured headaches, it cured upper respiratory infections, menstrual disorders, intestinal gas, which is a lot of things that, you know, they say that ginger in kind of like its purest form will help you with today. It was popular, although it had a very strong ginger flavor. And like people were just kind of, you know, getting it, drinking it. And so they changed the recipe. By 1921, the U.S. government made the original formula of Jamaica ginger prescription only. Because it was tasting so gingery, it was like kind of retooled. And so they put So to make their products more palatable, the manufacturers around the same time of Prohibition retooled the recipe, and they began to illegally replace the ginger or allicin with cheaper ingredients like molasses, glycerin, and castor oil, cutting costs and significantly diminishing the unpleasant ginger flavor. And then the president of the Jamaica, of the company that owned Jamaica Ginger, was looking for an alternative additive for the ginger formula, and he discarded the ethanol glycol and diethylene glycol as being too volatile, and eventually selected a mixture containing trithiocol phosphate, a plasticizer used in lacquers and paint finishing.
Oh, God.
Right. So he was advised by the manufacturer, the Celluloid Corporation, that it was non-toxic. However, it was later determined to be a neurotoxin that causes axonal damage to the nerve cells and the nervous system of human beings, especially those located in the spinal cord. So basically what happened is people are like drinking this to get through Prohibition. They, at the exact same time that people are happen to be like abusing it rather than putting tiny little bits of it into soda to help them when they have like period cramps, they're drinking the whole bottle, and now they're getting this like crazy, horrible paralysis that is now referred to as organophosphate-induced delayed neuropathy, or OPIDN. So the outbreak of the jakewalk was first detected in Oklahoma City by Ephraim Goldfrain, a Romanian immigrant and physician who ran a clinic called the Reconstitution Hospital. On February 27, 1930, a man staggered in off the street with his feet dangling like a mignonette. His legs were useless below the knee. By the end of the day, several more men had appeared, all afflicted with the same distinctive paralysis. One victim, a podiatrist, handed Goldfrain a list of 65 other people who had been struck with, quote, Jake leg. In the 1930s, large numbers of Jake users began to find they were unable to use their hands and feet anymore. Some victims could walk, but they had no control over their muscles, which would, like, have allowed them to point their toes upward. So they would have to raise their feet high with the toes flipping downward, which would touch the pavement first by their heels. So it's really, like, a terrible thing, and it's affecting people who, like, are alcoholics, who are kind of down on their luck anyway, perhaps. So the calves and legs would also soften and hang down with the muscles between, and the muscles would hang down between the thumbs and fingers, and they would atrophy. So within a few months, the adulterated Jake was identified as the cause of paralysis and the contaminated Jake was recovered. But by that time it was too late for the victims. Some did recover and some did not. And some got partial use of their limbs back. But for most of the people, the loss of their limbs was permanent. And the total number of victims was never really, like, they never determined how many it was. But most people say it was between 30 and 50,000 people that were affected. Oh, my God. I know. That's, like, so many people. And that's why I'm, like, again, I don't really want to, like, necessarily throw shade. But I'm very surprised that someone would name their bar this. It seems strange to me. Because this is a terrible, horrible injustice that happened to people that were being poisoned by a corporation, making money off them, becoming paralyzed. So a lot of the victims were immigrants to the U.S., and most of them were poor with little political or social influence. The victims received very little assistance from Harry Gross, who is the owner of this company and is part owner of the Boston Hub products. They were ultimately fined $1,000 each and given 2 years suspended jail sentences.
Oh, cool.
Very interesting, huh? So, but you know what, Nicole? It's good because so much has changed since then, because now we really make corporations pay for what they do. And not only do we make them pay, you know, we also make them pay their taxes, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We do.
It's, like, so good. So interestingly enough, there's, like, dozens and dozens and dozens of blues songs that were recorded in the early 1930s about Jake and about the Jake Walk. Jake Walk Papa by Asa Martin, Jake Liquor Blues by Ishman Bracey. The incident became well known later on. In the late 50s, there was cases of organophosphate poisoning in Germany, Spain, Italy on a large scale, and in Morocco, where cooking oil was adulterated with jet engine lubricant from an American airbase, and it led to paralysis in approximately 10,000 victims and became an international
jet incident. Engine lubricant, like, expensive? Why would they put it in the oil?
I have no idea. Why do they put fucking fentanyl and cocaine? It doesn't make any sense. That's a whole other story. But so the first person... Blah, 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 blah. Okay. The first person to record the Jake paralysis, Ishman Bracey, the black blues singer who recorded the Jake Liquor Blues in March of 1930. Another singer, Tommy Johnson, recorded Alcohol and Jake Blues. It's believed that no other incident has inspired as much popular music as the Jake Walk epidemic, which is so interesting to me. And I have, like, so many old blues records from my dad that I'm going to kind of go sifting through them today and see what I can find, because I have a lot of, like, 1930s, 1940s era jazz records. I'm going to see what's on there. I'm jazz and blues records. Miracle cures were rumored for Jake legs. Some of the affected but some of the people were, like, affected forever, like I said. Not all of the victims were poor and alcoholic, but a lot of them were, and they talk about embarrassing symptoms of impotence in songs. Every song by a blues singer mentions the limber leg. 79-year-old victim Gwyn Davis says, since only whites gathered statistics on the epidemic, it's impossible to determine how many Black people suffered from the ailment. The songs remain the best evidence that Jake Legg affected the Black community severely.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah. So it's a terrible, I mean, it's a really terrible thing. And one of the, like, you know, perils of Prohibition, one of the many kind of terrible things to happen during Prohibition. And just another, you know, more evidence that we've never really cared about poor people or people of color, and we continue not to. And I'm not sure about the name of the bar, but they're not open anymore, so whatever.
We don't have to boycott them.
Yeah. But it's just kind of an interesting story that I never knew anything about.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah. So ginger is good, but not when it's mixed with jet fuel, and that's the moral.
Yeah, or lacquer.
Yes, don't drink lacquer, don't drink jet fuel. What are some things that, like, help you when you're sick? Like, what are your go-to, like, trying to help yourself if you're not feeling well?
I just usually drink a soda, and I like to have, I got Tom Yum soup the first day that I was sick, which I also really like, because it's kind of spicy.
Yeah, I feel like a spicy thing really helps. I'm big on, like, when I'm not feeling good, I recently got into enemas. I feel like maybe you should try, like, a chicken soup enema.
No.
With noodles. For texture.
Good idea.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and recommend a chicken matzo ball soup enema.
Great.
You just get the matzo ball right up there. You have to get, like, a big enema tube. Yeah. I make sure it's boiling hot. I like to take an Epsom salt bath. Have you tried that?
No, I don't have any Epsom salt.
Oh, well, are you mobile at all? Can you get to the store?
Yeah, I can go to the store.
I really recommend Epsom salts. It just, you know, one of those things that I haven't done a ton of research on the science of why it works, but I trust it. And it really always does help me when I'm not feeling good. Also, my mom always used to do a thing with me when I was sick, which I feel like is helpful, where she would do wet, cold, like, cold towel and then really, really hot towel.
Mm-hmm.
Cold towel, hot towel, cold towel, hot towel. But if you're not feeling good and you don't have someone else to bring you these towels, it is difficult to, like, keep getting different temperature towels.
Different towels, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's really, and it's another kind of insult when you're, like, a single person to have to, like, go through a sickness. I don't know. For me, whenever I'm sick and I'm alone, I'm like, this is really literally adding insult to injury.
Rude. There ought to be a law.
There ought to be a law against it. You know what else I think is a great thing, if you can get it, is wellness formula. It's just like a mega dose of different vitamins, and it's kind of something I rely on when I'm not feeling good, or oil of oregano. Really helpful.
Yeah, I've been taking some of that.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or you could just, like, you know, put dry oregano into a rolling paper and smoke it, like I did when I was in fourth grade. Mm-hmm.
I have also done that. Yeah.
Did you ever smoke tea? I feel like we've talked about this on the show before, but I can't be sure. Have you ever smoked, like, a tea bag?
I have, yes.
Why do kids smoke tea bags?
Because they're idiots. We also used to drink that, like, peppermint.
Schnapps?
No, it's like peppermint cooking, like, flavoring, but it has a lot of alcohol in it. So people would drink that.
That's really similar to this Jake issue.
I know.
How interesting. You know, if you eat, like, enough nutmeg, you can, like, get high?
Yeah, but you could also get sick from it.
You could die. It's like you could die or be high. You might as well try something else. Maybe, like, a raw joint or something.
That marijuana is legal, it's probably a little easier for everyone.
Yeah. Is it legal in Indiana?
No.
Indiana, but what a bore. Come on. Is Mike Pence still there? Do you guys hang out?
Yeah, we hang out. He's really sweet. He's my mentor.
He's much better in person. He's actually Eminem.
Yeah, he's misunderstood. Yeah.
That's my favorite. He's misunderstood. That's my favorite meme of all time. Like, Obama, and, like, sitting in the Oval Office with his head in his hands, and Biden sitting there looking at him. And it's like Biden, like, Eminem sure hasn't aged well.
Oh, yeah, that's really, like, funny.
Joe, that's Mike Pence. It's so funny. Because it's funny. True. Did we talk about on the show yet Eminem's new restaurant, Mom Spaghetti?
Yeah, I think we did.
Do we know how that's doing or what the menu is?
I think there's like spaghetti, like fazoli's.
What's a fazoli?
Fazoli's is like an Italian chain restaurant.
Oh, like we don't fast have food. That.
Fazoli's, real Italian, real fast.
No, we don't have that. I'm going to look up the menu really quick since we have some time to kill. Although, momspaghetti.com. Guys, we're moments away from finding out. Although this is taking a while. Ah, they serve it in like a to-go container. Look, people have been trying to make spaghetti that you walk with a thing for a long time now. And I have to be honest, it's just not, I don't think it's ever going to catch on. Stop trying to make that happen.
It's not right. No, don't do it.
You can't click on the menu. It's just like a to-go container with meatballs dropping into it and falling everywhere and plopping onto the floor.
It sounds stressful. Also, didn't he learn anything from Pasta Mania, the restaurant made by Hulk Hogan?
Oh, right. Pasta Mania. Yeah, no, clearly he didn't. And I feel like, how could you not have your menu online? Like, how are we supposed to know what we could get?
It probably changes every day, Zara. It's probably seasonal. Yes,
that's true. It probably is. Do you think he works there now?
Yeah, I mean, probably making some squash mac and cheese or whatever.
He's like, cacio e pepe, no problem. No shirt, no shoes, big problem. Get out of my shop.
That's what he sounds like.
Yeah, Eminem is Italian, for all of you guys who didn't know. Well, Nikki, maybe we should cut the show short today because you sound like you're not feeling good and you probably need to snuggle up some more in your beddy bye.
Yeah. I'm time for me to take a nap.
A tiny snuggler? Have you just been napping and napping?
Yes, it's great,
guys,
really.
Everyone, please wish Nicole that, you know, she doesn't die.
Wish on a star that I don't perish.
Yes, wish on your favorite star. And if you guys have any recommendations of, you know, secret remedy, home remedies that you're grandpappy had, please send them to us and then we'll know that we actually have listeners. We're gonna assume no one's listening to the show.
Prove it to us.
Yeah, prove it. And prove it by sending us money from your wallet to the Nicole Bailey Get Well Soon Fund. Thank you. Okay, guys, we love you, and just lose yourself in the moment. You own it. Never gonna let it go. His palms are sweaty and his knees are hairy. Mom Spaghetti. Okay, hasta la M&M's pasta.
Bye-bye.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.